I'm Emma Louise Webb, and you're listening to Behind the Screams podcast.
And welcome to Behind the Screams. As always, my name is Ian. This is episode number 125, and in today's show, we are covering the 1990 movie Child's Play 2. But I am not alone for today's show. We are joined by returning guest, special friend of the show. I've been on his show many, many times. He's been on the show before talking about Dodgeball. Big welcome back to Rob the Cinema Drunkie. How are you doing, my friend?
Hey, thanks for having me back. I really appreciate it.
No, the pleasure is all mine. Absolutely delighted to have you back. For those who don't know, if you haven't checked it out, Rob was on our previous Dodgeball episode, as I said, and we had a pretty... It was good, because it was so much fun to do something a little bit different. You know, that was our sort of bonus episode for the month. And I know you you were really keen to do something a bit different, because obviously, you know, being on the House That Screams and the Action Drunkies and us here on Behind the Screams, you know, we very much focus on us these certain genres of horror. So it was very good to just sort of take a break from that, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Most definitely. I definitely like, action and horror has been my bread and butter, but I really love to, you know, just step outside for a second and talk about other stuff. And I really appreciated you allowing me the opportunity to do that on that particular episode. And I had a great time. I had a great time doing that one.
It was a blast. I mean, I could have spent the entire show just reeling off the quotes.
Most definitely.
So it was awesome. But we are returning to the world of horror today. Now, before we get into the housekeeping and things like that, I just want to take a quick moment. The day of we are recording this is the 23rd of March 2021, and that marks the 1 year anniversary since the UK first went into its very first lockdown due to the coronavirus pandemic. Now, throughout the day, here in the UK, we've been having a minute silence. There's been several vigils and things like that throughout the day. So I just want to take a very brief moment to reflect on that. Since the beginning of the COVID pandemic, here in Scotland, we've had so far almost 10,000 deaths and over 120,000 deaths throughout the United Kingdom. And everyone here on the Behind the Screams family, and I'm sure that extends to the entire Behind the Screams House That Screams family, throughout the entire world, sends our deepest condolences to anyone who has been affected by the pandemic and who has lost a loved one. So, with that being said, let's get into the housekeeping for today's show. Rob, where can people find you on the socials? What shows can they find you on?
Of course, as you mentioned, you could find me on the House of Screams. There with the hostess with most is my dear friend Candy and her husband Shaun of the Dead, as well as my dear, dear friends, Dave Gurman, Erica Wright, Nico Nice, and my brother from another Mac, the All-Star, who is also my co-host on our show, The Action Drunkies, where we talk all things action. We are coming back for a second season, March 30th, which is the day before my birthday, which, you know, makes sense because we went into ended the first season the day after his birthday, and we're coming back the day before mine, so I thought that was cute to do that. But yeah, you can also find me on social media as Cinema Drunkie on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can find us as The Action Drunkies on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Of course, you can find The House of Screams at @House_Screams on Twitter. And you can find our host Candy as Candy the Final Girl on Instagram. And also wanted to give a quick shout out to my boy Mike from Actors Undisputed, who talks about the films of one of the greatest action stars of all time, Mr. Scott Atkins, the most complete action star in the world, as well as my buddy Michael Cook on Hit Rewind, who, like you, has also given me many opportunities to talk about things outside of action and horror. So, that's That's my house cleaning regularly.
Awesome. Yeah, please, everyone at home, go check out all of those people. I've made now several appearances on the House That Screams podcast. I've just, I think, signed up with Candy to make another 4 appearances over your next 2 seasons. So
Yeah.
you'll be seeing a lot more of me over there. Candy and Sean, they were both recently on our VHS episode. Candy had previously been on our Shaun of the Dead episode. They're both coming back next week, actually. They're back on the show next week. They're going to
Great.
be talking to me about Wrong Turn. And
Ooh.
David from the House That Screams podcast is also coming on to the show in about a month's time, and we're going to be talking about the OG Night of the Living Dead. So it's
Ooh. Nice.
so it's I know that's like a firm favorite of the House That Screams crew. So
Yeah. Anything Romero is a favorite. Well, not Diary of the Dead. Or Diarrhea of the Dead, as Candy likes to call it.
but yeah, no, absolutely looking forward to welcoming them all of them back onto the show. Don't forget, I haven't done my own plugs yet. Don't forget, you can find this show on Twitter at Screams Behind, Facebook and Instagram's the Behind the Screams podcast. But we're not just there. We're also on Twitch, where we stream mainly horror video games 4 nights a week. So find us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ Behind the Screams podcast. We're also on TikTok, where you'll find Lindsay posting some promo clips for episodes, and she also posts videos about some of the trivia that we do on this podcast. So search for us, Behind the Screams podcast, on there. And if you would like to support this show more than listening to it, you can subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/ Behind the Screams. You can sign up there for just £1. You get early access to episodes, you can get bonus episodes, and a whole lot more there as well. Give a quick shout out to our Patreon subscribers. Shout out to Graham, Lorna Pearl, Nico, Coyote Wildfire, The Girl That's Scary Podcast, The TGIF Podcast, Galileo, Lee, Slayaway Radio, Carrie J, Claire L, Sophie, and Boomer. And we have 2 new subscribers to shout out this week. Thank you so much to Naomi and to Lee B. You guys, thank you so much for signing up. Thank you to everyone for their continued support. You really do help keep our lights running, keeping our bills paid, and keeping us in a podcast. So thank you very much to everyone. But Rob, are you ready to talk about this movie?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, so we are talking about Child's Play 2.
Take your breath away. This fall, Chucky rules.
Did you miss me, Andy? I sure missed you.
Child's Play 2. Keep an eye out for it.
This movie was released in 1990, was written by Don Mancini, directed by John Lifer, and stars Brad Dourif, Alex Vincent, and Christina Lice. The IMDb plot is as follows. While Andy's mother is admitted to a psychiatric hospital, the young boy is placed in foster care, and Chucky, determined to claim Andy's soul, is not far behind. Now, you know, when we talk about and I'm sure you guys have been used to do this as well. You know, when people talk about big franchises and things, specifically on like social media, you know, Twitter and Facebook and all of that sort of jazz, you know, the same sort of four or five names are constantly brought up, aren't they? You know, you've got Elm Street, Friday the 13th, TCM, Halloween. Where does the Child's Play franchise rank for you?
I would actually rank it pretty high, but that's because I'm biased. I have a real soft spot for the Child's Play franchise. I've stated before that the first Child's Play was basically my intro to horror. I used to be, you know, terrified of horror, and Child's Play was the first one, was the one that really got me into it. You know, it's kind of like a weird way to trick kids into watching horror movies, because you got this doll and he's friendly looking, looks like my buddy. And, you know, I remember watching it and enjoying it, even as a little, you know, kid. And it became one of those films that I to this day, I still return to the first Child's Play, you know, all the time, you know, and the franchise here and there. I started to kind of tune out during Seed of Chucky. I appreciate what he was going for, but he went too far in that direction. He kind of tried to rebound with Curse of Chucky and Cult, and but I would say like the first three, I don't mind part three. I know it's not everyone's cup of tea. Not everyone basically votes it as the worst. I don't think it's as terrible as people say. And Bride of Chucky is really important to me. It's one of those monumental movies of my teenage horror fandom. But the first two, especially this one, are my favorites. This one is probably my favorite out of the franchise. I love me some Child's Play too. It's one that I probably watch the most too out of all of them. I would go back and forth between Child's Play 1 and 2, and Part 2 is the one. So, yeah, the entire franchise in the whole was like, means, you know, a pretty much a good deal to me. But Child's Play 2 is definitely my favorite of the bunch.
That's cool. I mean, just on a side note there, point to me to a horror fan who isn't in love with Jennifer Tilly, and, you know, I'll say you're crazy, because everyone loves Jennifer Tilly. With that being said, then, I know this is slightly off topic in terms of this movie, but how do you feel about the 2019 movie?
To be honest, I haven't seen it. I have not pulled it. Even though I've heard from many a source that it's actually not bad, that it's actually an enjoyable remake. I just haven't pulled the trigger on it yet.
Yeah.
I will eventually, though. I just haven't.
I would say, obviously, I'm not going to spoil things, but I'd say if you go into the remake with, try to go into it with not too many preconceptions, you know, try to just sort of let go all of your feelings about the other Child's Play movies, specifically some of those early ones. Try to let go of the fact that, you know, Brad Dourif obviously isn't in it and things like that. I actually quite like the remake. I think it's a solid movie. I wouldn't go as far to say as I think it's, you know, the best thing that came out in 2019 or anything like that, but I think it's a really solid, enjoyable flick, so I would definitely recommend that you check it out at some point.
I definitely will, based on your recommendation.
Well, thank you. So, obviously, you know, we covered myself and Nico, we covered the first Child's Play movie a little while back, and I was very high on it. Nico was not quite as high on Child's Play as I was. So I was really, really excited when, you know, you chose that we were going to be doing this movie. Because it had actually been quite a while since I'd last watched it. So I was really excited, first and foremost, just to get to revisit it. You know, because it's one of those things that, because since I started doing a horror podcast, I actually don't really get to visit a lot of horror movies just for enjoyment anymore. If that, you know, and, you know, because we're pumping out so much content and things like that, I don't really, and you know, we're doing the Twitch and we're doing all these other things, like I really don't get the time to sit down and enjoy horror as much as I used to, even though that don't listeners, don't worry, you know, I still love horror. We'll keep going. So I was really excited because this is a movie that I used to just sit down and enjoy, you know, like a movie that I could just put on, you know, even if you were having a bad day or, you know, what, you weren't really sure what to put on in the evenings. I would always find, you know, Child's Play 2, it's for me, and I think this is pretty matched with the first one, actually. And I'm with you, like, these two are my favourites of the franchise. They find that balance, don't they, between actual horror, you know, because there are some pretty horrific and some scary moments, especially in that first one, I would say maybe slightly more. But they do balance that horror and just that comedy fun element, don't they?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, I think this one balances the slasher comedy aspects well. Probably a little better than the first one, because the first one seems to be going more for like classical suspense kind of thing. You know, with the first half where it's like they're trying to make you suspect whether it may be actually Andy or not, even though it's kind of obvious from the outset that it's Chucky itself, Brad Dourif's character Charles Lee Ray. You know, they do that intro with him doing whatever to the doll. We find out later that he puts a soul into the doll, but like they still try to make you think it might be Andy, like, you know, that kind of thing. Now we've got all that out of the way, we know the doll is alive, so they can have as much fun with it as they want, and they really do have fun with that, you know, that aspect. You know, Chucky is now just a full-fledged just slasher villain, and he's so great in the in just his slasher villain role, you know, with his little filthy mouth. That was a big problem for my parents, you know. I mean, my parents were very free with what I watched, you know, as long as they didn't have nudity in it. I couldn't see boobies, but, you know, sure, the watch RoboCop, watch poor Candy get eviscerated in the boardroom. That's okay, but no boobies. No boobies.
Have to draw the line somewhere.
yeah, most definitely. So, but, like, that was, like, Chucky, you know, killing the school teacher and ripping his own hand off was okay, but him saying fuck a bunch of times, like, hey, you got to be careful with that.
I have to say, one of my favorite bits of the entire franchise, and it's back to the first one, is just that moment where, you know, where he turns around and, you know, tells Andy's, you fucking bitch, and just starts going on this absolute tirade. That's I think, my favorite movie, part of the entire franchise. Chucky's potty mouth is one of the reasons why I love this franchise so much, because when it comes to these other big sort of slasher villains, number one, you know, you've got like Michael Myers doesn't say anything, Jason doesn't say anything, Freddy, yeah, he's got all these funny one-liners and he says bitch a lot, but he doesn't really have that potty mouth, does he?
No, he doesn't. No, it's almost like, not to cut you off, but it's almost like Chucky is kind of like he's like, like you said, Michael, Jason don't talk. Freddy talks, but Freddy, you know, he's kind of got those puns. Like, Chucky is almost like the slasher everyman, because he makes these, like, he cusses, but it's almost like you would see, like, a regular guy cuss. He's almost like a foul-mouthed Al Bundy, you know? like after he rips his hands off and he sticks the knife in there to make, like, his hand into a blade, and the way he just looks at it and goes, I hate kids.
I relate to that. I don't know about you, but I absolutely relate to that. But I think you're absolutely spot on. It makes him... It sounds weird saying this, but it makes him relatable, you know?
No, because, it really does.
Because, you know, like, we all go through... I mean, I'm Scottish, we swear. You know, this podcast is probably the longest of any day I can go without swearing too much. And
No, I agree with you. I'm a New Yorker, so, like, we say fuck a lot.
Oh, we say much worse things than that a lot.
I can imagine.
I won't say too much here because I don't want to offend. I've probably said them all on the podcast before anyway. But I really like as well the thing you mentioned earlier. When it comes to this movie, you know, that first film, I mean, I adore Child's Play, the first movie, I think. I really, really do. And that first film, you're right, you know, they're trying to build that suspense, you know, for a large chunk of, you know, of that sort of first half of the movie. And then here, you know, that cat's already out of the bag, you know, so it almost frees them a little bit, you know, it almost frees the director, you know, the legendary Don Mancini, that, you know, it almost frees them a little bit to just be like, let's just go and have fun with this character, you know, you don't have to put in so much. I mean, yeah, of course, right at the beginning, you've got a couple of little elements here or there, but that's, like you say, the cat's out the bag quick. And I really, really love that because it just seemed like everyone was having fun with this. And I think that comes across so well and really, really comes across to me as a viewer. And, you know, that and that makes it resonate with me because if they're all having fun doing this, then I'm going to have fun watching it.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. Like in the situations, too, where I like his treatment of Andy, and it's just like he's annoyed with Andy because he wants to get Andy's body and Andy's being persistent, but also it's like come on, dude, like the scene where he kills the guardian of the foster home.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And he tells them, snap out of it, you act like you never seen a dead body before. You know, like it's just, that's what makes it fun, like his utter frustrations. And it's just like it almost becomes like a series of unfortunate events for Chuck. Yeah. It's just like everything that can't go wrong will go wrong for him. Like, you know, like that end sequence in the factory, which is an amazing sequence. Mm. Like, it's the best, like, that whole maze of Chucky dolls that he's chasing them through is just really effective climax. But you begin to feel bad for Chucky. You know? He gets his arm ripped off, then he gets his legs ripped off, then he gets melted. And then, like, to cover it up, they stick the air pump in his mouth. And you're just like, his eyes and just like, oh, you know what I'm saying?
He like, just, you know, so yeah, it must have been a Monday or something like that for
Chucky. Right. He just cannot catch a break.
Absolutely. And what I love there as well is, you know, throughout the film, we can sense that sort of growing frustration within Chucky. You know, I love that moment where him and Andy are in the, I think it's the newspaper truck. They're in the back of the newspaper truck and you know, Kyle sort of comes up behind them and she's sort of peeping the horn and things like that. And Chucky just gives her the middle finger. He's almost like, for fuck's sake, you know, why don't you just fuck off, okay?
No. Or when he's in the car with her and, like, you know, they're arguing and he just gets so frustrated. Just shut up and drive before I kick your fucking teeth in.
Sorry.
When she stops the car short, he goes flying through the windshield, and then she tries to run home. Boy, he's like, "You goddamn woman driver!"
What I love as well is another moment there when they get pulled over by the police officer, and he asks his name, and he's just like, "I'm Chucky," you know?
Yeah. Chucky. Like he's not even trying to pretend.
He just wants to get this little shit of a kid. But you know, like you're talking about there about the moment where, you know, goes flying through the windshield, and it's something that's obviously with the premise of the movie, it's something that could have been, that could so easily come across so badly, and that's the sort of physical element of the horror and the comedy, you know, because you know, we obviously, it's a doll, it would be really, really, really easy for that, and the original as well, for this to just to look really naff, really tacky, and just not work at all. And I think that has to go to all credit to the creators of the movie, because I never really feel that, especially in these sort of first two movies.
Right. No, most definitely. They had a hard task ahead of them, you know, because like the biggest complaint you always find about these movies is that why don't you just take the damn doll and like just, you know, throw them away somewhere, you know? Yeah. And I think they were smart to do it like how they did it, especially in the first two, where it's like it's more methodical, you know. But Chucky's like, he's a trickster, you know. Like the scene where he appears to the the dude in the car, mm-hmm. and you know he's got like the his gun on him, and then and the guy's like, please don't kill me, you know, and then you find out it's a squirt gun, and it's like, oh, okay, and then he just pulls the bag over his head, and then he's just like taking so much relish in it, and there's this like moments like that where he's like he's playful, and then he's immediately fucked up right afterwards is what I love about it. My favorite thing about it is you know, of course, Andy, as you mentioned in the synopsis, Andy separated from his mother, he's in a foster home, he gets picked up by these two parents, and that's where he meets Kyle, played by Christine Elise, and Garrett Graham, of course, also known as Bud the Chud, from Chud 2. He's a dick, just straight up from the beginning. And then, you know, of course you have, I forgot her name. Alex from American Werewolf in London. Her name is escaping me. I'm sorry.
Oh no, now it's going to escape me too. I'll figure it out in a second.
Jenny Argutter.
That's the one.
Yeah. She's nice, you know, but Garrett Graham is a dick. Phil was his name.
Yes.
And like he doesn't believe Andy, you know, from the offset. Like, you know, he almost doesn't even want Andy, you know, but Jenny Argutter's character, she wants to help. And
there's a sort of suggestion that they can't have children of their own, isn't there?
Yeah.
At some point in the movie, so they've sort of started up this they've become foster parents. Sorry, I cut you off there.
Yeah. No, it's all good. She's very forgiving. He's not, and he doesn't believe Andy at all. Due to this, you know, Chucky story. Which, you know, he basically, poor Andy comes with this baggage. And also, he doesn't want Andy, and they just happen to have a good guy doll in the house. And what I like about the movie also, I wanted to get into, is that in these slasher movies, especially when slasher movies that deal with the fanciful and fantastical, you know, like for perfect example, Freddy, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, it's really hard to, like, you know, to accept when, like, they're trying to tell, like, oh, it's Freddy who did it, you know, and the main characters, like, you know, the side characters don't believe them, like, oh, Freddy's fake, he's dead, you know. What I like about this one is that Andy, he's a child, so you could believe that he'd be trying to say this, but Andy's smart enough to know that nobody will believe him, so he keeps most of it to himself, mm-hmm. a lot of the time, you know. He's scared of the doll, but like he pretends to, like, you know, play with it, you know, just to get them off his back. And I like that aspect of it. But what I love about it on a whole, like, you know, the whole arc of it is that he's secretly at night trying to find, because he suspects it's Chucky, and because there's another doll in there, but he suspects that the already that Chucky has switched places with that doll. Tommy was the name of the doll.
Yeah.
And so he goes at night to try to find Chucky and kill it, and then like him and Chucky get into the fight in the cellar in the basement, and Phil shows up and he sees Andy down there, and he tries to slowly walk to Andy, and he gets tripped by Chucky and left hanging upside down. And then, like, seconds before he falls to his death, he sees Chucky standing there alive. And the way Chucky just takes that amusement, that, like, you know, it reminds me of, remember Pitch Black with Vin Diesel?
Yes.
There's a moment in there where they need Riddick's help, Vin Diesel's character. They need his help, but he's locked up.
Mm-hmm.
So Cole House's character, you know, is that we're going to let you go so you can help us. And he tells him, basically, no. You better kill me now while you have the chance. But Cole Hauser relents and says, no, you know, we're going to help. Later on, they get into a confrontation, and he leaves Cole Hauser for dead, and he reminds him, told you should have killed me. But he takes relish in that knowledge that you should have listened. And I like that Chucky kind of does a similar thing, like, because Phil's upside down looking at him, he sees Chucky alive, he goes, how's it hanging, Phil?
Great line, right, as well.
Yeah. I think it's my favorite line in the movie, just particularly for that moment. Right as he drops Phil to his death, you know, that you should have listened to the kid, you know? Mm. and now you're going to die because you didn't. You know, and it's what one of those aspects, that's one of the aspects of this movie I enjoy, you know, that it takes those like elements and just plays with them a bit, you know, and also like has fun with it, like you were saying earlier. It's really a complete package as a slasher film, you know, because it has all that stuff in it, and that's why I love it so much.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what I like as well, like, there's a couple of points that you brought up there that I'll quickly just sort of mention. When it comes to, you know, that line about, you know, how's it hang and fell, what I think it proves is they know. It's so easy with this, especially, I think, with the Child's Play movies, because, again, obviously, we've got a slasher villain here who's so vocal, and, you know, it would be really easy for all of the lines to be just delivered at 11, you know, the entire time. But there's a bit of restraint with that line, like you were saying there, you know, he's sort of relishing in this fact that Phil's finally realizing that, you know, Andy's been telling him the truth the whole time, I mean, of course, we've got the legendary Brad Dourif, who is, for me, one of the finest people in horror, you know, based on his resume as well.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm sure we'll probably give a quick minute to him in a little bit. So I really like that aspect of it. You mentioned there as well, you know, about how smart Andy actually is in this movie, because I think there's a lot of times in movies as well, specifically when in horror movies, when they're dealing with young people and kids, it's just to make them dumb as a bag of rocks, really. And here, you know, like you say, Andy doesn't tell Phil and Joanne everything. You know, like you say, he makes on that he's playing with the Chucky doll. He only really ever says it was Chucky, you know, when he's been explicitly asked, who did this? Was this you?
Yeah.
You know, no, it was Chucky. So I really like those sorts of aspects to it. Because for me, what that just shows is that, you know, I think there's a common misconception about slasher movies that, you know, they're kind of just sort of dumb, schlocky flicks. And I think, specifically maybe to non-genre fans, I think the majority of horror fans, you know, if you're big into your horror, you understand what the slasher movies are all about. But I think for non-genre fans, there's that tendency to think of them that way. And those are just sort of two little examples of, you know, thinking, you know what, this might be a slasher flick, but this is still clever, you know, they're still adding in little details that make you think, that make you realize, you know, characters are smart, you know, they're restrained with the delivery of some of the lines and things like that. So I think that's what actually elevates this kind of movie from, you know, being that sort of dumb slasher flick that people just seem to label these types of movies as, and actually elevates it into a pretty damn good horror movie.
No, most definitely agree with you. You know, is I think slasher movies are the one that gets the most bagged on from, you know, critics and, you know, fans alike. I mean, of course, we're fans, so we love it, but the critics, you know, they seem to use the slasher genre of, you know, the subgenre of horror as the one to bag on the most. And, I mean, a lot of them are just, yeah, pieces of shit. I've seen enough to make that assumption. A lot of them are just really bad, but like when they're good, they're really good. And this one's fucking great because, like we discussed before, it's the playfulness and the cleverness. Is you hit it right on the money there. Yeah. It's just damn clever. You know, like they own everybody in this movie knows what the hell they're doing. And, you know, it's they're not pretending it's high art, but, you know, they're not just, they're not like, it's just shortchanging it, you know, they're taking the material and using it for all it's worth to just make a damn entertaining slasher movie. And you know, a lot of credit has to go to Brad Dourif because, like you said, like, he really could just be over the top with it, but he chooses not to. A lot of times, like that line, how's it hanging, Phil? He delivers it really subtle and quiet. Mm-hmm. Just that, you know, a lot of his lines, the only lines he really just goes crazy with is when he swears. You know? Yeah. Nobody says fuck like Brad Dourif. You know? Brad Dourif is one of the greatest people. Like, I haven't put Brad Dourif up there with Samuel Jackson and Al Pacino as one of the greatest actors to use the word fuck.
I mean, you know, in terms of horror as well, for me, and I'm sure for many others who are listening as well, I'd put Brad Dourif up there with, you know, Robert Englund, with, you know, Bruce Campbell, all these, you know, big names of horror movies that are so well loved and revered. I think Brad Dourif's name is right up there at the top of that list.
Right. And not just for playing an iconic character in horror, for just being one of the finest actors ever, who just happens to work in the horror genre a lot. Like, of course it should go without saying that a lot of us aren't the biggest fans of Rob Zombie's 2 Halloween film, but I'll be damned if he is not the best thing in both movies, especially the second one. He's the only reason to watch the second one. Because he's absolutely fucking fantastic in it.
Yeah, I mean, again, a movie that maybe not everyone is a fan of, but his sort of cameo at the beginning of Urban Legend as well is easily one of the best bits of the movie. Let's not forget the man is in the Lord of the Rings trilogy also as Grima Wormtongue, you know, so this guy has got so much range and is just so incredibly talented, and that talent really does lend itself so well to this franchise. I don't know if you knew that he's coming back to the franchise for the TV series that's coming.
I'm actually hyped about that.
I'm very hyped. So apparently Jennifer Tilly's back as well, and I'm very, very excited to see what they do with that, because obviously it's Don Mancini who's back in the writer's seat as well, so I'm very excited to see what they do with that. One of the things you sort of mentioned earlier that I want to just touch back on, because we sort of brushed over the fact that, you know, like we said, Andy's mother, is it Karen? I kind of forget.
Karen.
She gets sort of, we don't see her in this movie, and she's in a psychiatric hospital. Apparently they did film some scenes with her, but I think they ended up just on the cutting room floor. We don't see her in this movie, and one of the sort of complaints I sometimes have around movies, not just horror movies, is, you know, when, because I really like her character in the first movie, is when in the second movie they either, you know, kill them off really quickly, a la Alien 3, or they're significantly weaker in the second movie, like Halloween 2, and here, obviously, she's not dead, but she's just not in it at all. Would you have liked to have seen her back, or do you think the story was fine without her?
They give her a brief mention, and you see her in a photograph that Andy carried with him. Her mention also coincides with the mention reference to the Chicago Police Department. Specifically Detective Mike. They don't mention Detective Mike Norris, but they mention the police department. And I gotta say, Mike Norris is a bit of a dick, because they said, they denied everything. And I was like, yeah, good going, Mike. You let this woman take the fall for everything, basically.
I know.
Yeah, that was fucked up. You know, they put her in a psychiatric home, and Annie got put in foster care. And I love Catherine Hicks in the first one. She was the center of that movie, and she was absolutely great in it. But I don't think it was necessary to have her in this one. This one is very much Andy's story. Mm-hmm. Like, Andy was a big part of the first one, but it was more about Karen, you know, trying to figure out what's going on with her son, and then figure out Doll's alive and trying to save her son. It's very much Karen's story. This one is very much Andy's story. So it's very, you know, it works well that she's not in it. I don't think she was needed. It's fine as is.
And I mean, as well, you know, her sort of role, if you will, is kind of filled by Christine Elise, who plays I've forgotten her name. Kyle. And you know, she sort of fulfills that kind of role. Obviously, she's sort of like the big sister, you know, foster sister or whatever. And I think she does a good job in this movie as well.
Oh, she's fantastic. Christina Lee is absolutely fantastic. She like in one shot really became one of the more popular final girls, if you will, in the slasher genre. She's just like, you know, like you said, like she basically plays the big sister role. And Kyle was cool as shit, you know. It's like one of those kind of big sisters you wish you had. Like I have a big sister myself, and she's cool as shit. But, like at that time, you know, when you're a young kid, you know, your older sister's like, "Bleh, go away." But and you're like, "Yeah, I wish mine was as cool as Kyle." You know, but Kyle rocks. I love Christina Lisa's Kyle. She definitely rocks.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things, you know, and you'll know this, you know, we sort of communicate in things on our social medias. We post quite often, you know, little questions around horror movies, you know, what's your favorite this, what's your favorite genre this, or favorite movie in this genre, or type of this movie, or whatever, or not. And, right. And whenever we post some of these kind of questions, you know, final girls, actresses, movie franchise, whatever, it feels like to me that Child's Play is almost forgotten about quite a lot. Like, I don't know if it's maybe... Do you think some of the later movies have had that negative impact on these earlier ones? Because, I mean, for me, and I'm sure, you know, based on what you've said before for you already, this first and the second movie specifically, you know, they're right up there with any slasher movie. You know, you could put it up against a Nightmare on Elm Street or a Halloween movie. And yeah, of course, they're very different movies, but it would compete. Yet, you know, those movies and those franchises seem to have sort of just dominated the public opinion, dominated sort of people's fandoms, if you will. And Child's Play just seems to get left behind a little bit. Why do you think, or are you of that opinion? Like, do you notice that as well?
Yeah, I do. It does have its fandom. You do have, like, you know, obviously you and me, we're fans, and there's a bunch of other people that's fans, and, you know, obviously they wouldn't be doing that television series and they wouldn't be making remakes if they didn't have the fans, you know, because but yeah, it definitely does get overshadowed by some of the other bigger franchises, of course, like the big three, Freddy, Jason, and Michael Myers. Like, those are the top three, and then, like, you know, you come down and you find, you know, your Texas Chainsaw Massacre, your Hellraiser, and then this one. Why I think that is, I think it is the sequels did tend to have a blow on the impact, especially in the first two, because you have the first two, which are very high, and then that third one came out and just took the fucking, like, because Child's Play 2, I think, did very fairly well. Mm-hmm. And it was very fairly popular at the time. And then Child's Play 3 came out, like, a little less than a year, almost like maybe 11 months after the Part 2 came out. And that one was just, like, everybody just considered that one a slog because you didn't have Alex Vincent return because they decided to age him a few years. The kills weren't as creative. The setting was a little boring. I enjoy it for what it is, but it's definitely lesser than the first two. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you know, it was years before we got another one. Then we got Bride of Chucky, which revitalized it into this horror comedy aspect, more comedy than the past three, because the past three definitely had their comedy elements. And that worked for a while, and then they did See the Chucky, and it was just like, oh. I've met people who are fans of See the Chucky. I gotta say, I don't think I'm really one of them, because that one is just like, dude, what were you going for? Like, you know, and I think Mancini even admits, like, yeah, I kind of went a bit too far in places. So, and then, like, you know, he tries to course correct with Curse of Chucky, and that one gets a pretty good reception. They managed to, you know, spoilers for if you haven't seen Curse of Chucky, they managed to bring back Alex Vincent for a nice mm-hmm. little cameo at the end, and that was great. And then Cult of Chucky came out, and then it was just like, oh. It's like every time you step up, you kind of just bring yourself back to earth a bit, you know. And then they split off into two. You had the remake, and people were upset about the remake, but, you know, people loved the remake too. Like I said, I heard a lot of people praise the remake. You just did yourself, so I got to check that out eventually. And then, like, you know, you have a television show. So there's obviously the fandom there, but it just seems to, like, you know, every step forward, they end up taking a step back and kind of shooting themselves in the foot every once in a while. It doesn't have, like, you know, with most of the reason why those franchises are so popular, because, like, yeah, like, there's some entries that are, like, lesser than previous ones or ones that came after, but they're much more consistent than the Child's Play franchise seems to be at time, you know.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Look, we all know, you know, we've discussed it on this show and on House of Screams before about the various sort of missteps of franchises. You know, I think specifically when I was on your Dream Warriors episode, we got into quite a deep discussion about the various missteps of that franchise. Yeah. But I think, you know, even people who dislike, you know, some of those later movies in the Elm Street franchise would agree that you know, they're still decent movies, and you know, they're, even though slightly less favorites. And I think that goes as well, you know, for things like the Halloween franchise, although there's a couple of real stinkers in there in the Halloween franchise.
I've even on the Dodgeball episode, I've made my hatred known for Halloween 5.
We just covered that not long ago on the show. You know, I echo your sentiments specifically around Rob Zombie's Halloween 2. I don't actually quite mind the first one, but the second one is just almost unwatchable for me. Halloween Resurrection is a terrible movie, but, you know, it's schlocky fun and things like that. So, yeah, there's definitely that sort of, they're not on parallel in terms of consistency. I think you've really sort of hit the nail on the head there a little bit. But, I mean, when this franchise is good, it's so spot on. And I think the other thing as well is that, you know, you were talking about the time difference between, you know, Child's Play 2 and Child's Play 3, and really it being less than a full year. You know, and I think sometimes, specifically in the horror industry as well, we indulge ourselves just a little bit too much. You know, I think we as fans and studios and makers sometimes just need to show that little bit of restraint. Let a movie breathe for a couple of years, you know, 1-2 years. The fans will wait for 2 years for another movie. There's other things to keep our interest in the meantime, and I think just holding that restraint probably would have helped as well.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Like, sometimes studios, you know, they get a hit in their hands and they need another one just as fast. And the problem is that these horror films, especially slasher movies, are really easy to produce because, you know, they're done on, you know, very little money, especially when it's a big-time studio with the Universal, you know, one of the biggest studios ever. You know, like, they see, you know, just a little bit of money, you know, we could get this out quick, you know, let's keep striking while the iron's hot, you know, that kind of thing. And Don Mancini admitted that, like, I was kind of out of ideas, you know, going into that third one, and I probably shouldn't have did it. And it shows, like, you know, it's almost like because Don Mancini is showing he's a creative guy, you know, like, putting these situations together and, you know, the movies together. So to see that one, it's almost bereft of creativity, the third one, you know, and it's really kind of stale. Like, Brad Dourif is, like, really, like, and that amusement park finale is pretty cool, too. I would give it that, like, you know, when they're going through the horror ride and all that stuff, and he gets half his face cut off, and that's cool and all that stuff. And I like when he kills Andy Robinson, the barber. Presto, you're dead. I like that, too, and I think the best moment when he kills the head of the school with a heart attack. he means to stab him with the Rambo knife, but the dude just has a heart attack and dies. And he's like, "Oh, you gotta be fucking kidding me!" like he's so disappointed that this dude got scared so badly he just died of a heart attack without him having to do anything to him. I was like, oh, come on, man. that's Chucky for you. He's disappointed I didn't get to physically kill him. I just killed him, you know, with a scare. But yeah, like, other than that, it's just kind of, it's kind of boring, you know?
Yeah, I definitely get that.
And to follow so closely after the second one, which was just, like, as we talked about, so creative, you know, and it just kind of like just let the air out of the tires a bit, you know, and that's, you can see why the franchise went into, like, you know, quiet mode for so many years before it was revived by Brighter Chucky, where he decided to take a detour into, like, more comedic tendencies with the characters.
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree with your assessment there. You know, I think when you do that, you know, when those first two movies, you know, we'll get into sort of how the critics received this, but in terms of your audience and when those movies are received so positively, having such, like you say, a letdown. I don't want to say a letdown. I still don't think Child's Play 3 is a bad movie. It's just,
no,
you know, just not on the level of these two, is it? So I definitely get that.
I definitely agree with you there. It's on its own, it's not bad horror film, but like I said, like, when you follow Child's Play 2, it's definitely a disappointment.
Yeah.
Like, on its own, it's fine. Like, basically following Child's Play 2 so closely, it's like, yeah, you should have gestated on ideas for a bit before you put this one together.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, there's just a few more little points that I want to bring up before, you know, I'll let you have the floor if there's anything else that you want to talk about. You know, we've sort of talked about how sometimes, you know, slasher movies can be, you know, you've talked about how they're easy to produce, and, you know, sometimes they have a certain perception amongst either non-genre fans or, you know, just genre fans that don't particularly like slasher movies. But, you know, these two, first and second Child's Play, do have messages in them. You know, Don Mancini's spoken himself about, you know, the messages aimed towards, about capitalism, sorry, that's aimed towards, you know, kids and things like that. And I think that does come across really, really well, actually, in the first Child's Play movie.
Do
you think it comes across as strongly in this one?
Like, yeah, the first one, definitely you could see the, like, you know, capitalism and consumerism really just, you know, that being the point, you know, like, beware of just brainwashing your children. I think this one is a bit more, like, it kind of doesn't, like, go that route directly. Like, the beginning, maybe, when it shows how, like, because it focuses a little on the company aspects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where they had this, like, you know, just public relations nightmare that, oh, one of our products tried to kill one of our customers, and they're just like, ah, fuck that kid.
Don't you hate it when that happens?
yeah. And they're just like, let's get the ball rolling. Fuck that kid. You know, let's bury this, you know. And it shows that quite clearly, you know, that cutthroat aspects of corporate business, you know, when you have a conglomerate and they really don't give a shit about you at all. You know, they don't give a shit about their customers or their employees. Like, he literally they watch one of their employees die right in front of them, and they're just like, ah, whatever. and he tells his his assistant, what do you want me to do with the doll? Stick it up your ass, you know. Like, that's his own employee, like the dude that's under him, and he doesn't even give a shit about him, you know. Like, let's just keep this product going, you know. And I think that definitely does touch on that a bit. But then, like, after that, they're just full on into horror movie, you know.
Yeah.
But that's definitely Don Mancini taking his shots at, you know, like you said, capitalism, consumerism, you know, and he does it very well, you know, before going full on horror movie on us.
Yeah, I'll stand right next to him to fire my shots about capitalism, but I think we'd be here for way too long. This would be way too long an episode if we started getting too deep into that. But no, because, you know, I, obviously in the first one, you know, specifically when Andy, you know, like, everything is, you know, good guy branded as well. You know, he's watching a good guy advert. He's wearing like good guy pajamas. He's got like a good guy tool belt and eating good guy cereal. You know, like, and so I think that's the messaging and that is so strong. And then, then obviously, you know, at the beginning of this movie, you've got that sort of whole opening set piece where the workman or the scientist or whatever it is, he gets electrocuted. So yeah, definitely, I still feel those messages come through. One thing I wanted to ask you actually before I probably should have asked this before we started, and it's about the ending of this movie, because apparently, and I didn't know this, that there's different endings that are shown in the US and in the UK, and I actually wasn't aware of this until today. I was today years old when I found this out. So here in the UK, we don't get shown any sort of ending that suggests that Chucky is still alive.
No.
But in the US, you do, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. The first time I saw it, that ending wasn't on, like, as soon as Andy and Kyle leave the factory, the credits start rolling.
Yeah.
I didn't see that the alternate ending added on until I think it hit home video, where we go back into the factory. Mm-hmm. It's basically the intro to Child's Play 3, but done at the... in Child's Play 3, the movie opens, the factory's closed, there's cobwebs everywhere, and Chucky's decapitated corpse is still there, melted, and then his blood gets into the mix. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the plastic for the rubber and whatever, and that's how Chucky's recreated. That alternate ending is basically opening is basically the alternate ending to Child's Play 2.
Okay.
Where it's basically the same thing, but obviously there's no cobwebs because this is right after their battle, and Chucky's recreated, and you see his head being remade in the mold, and it opens up, and you know he has a new form, and he smiles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when, like, you know, the credits start rolling. That definitely was something that was added, I think, later on, because the first time I saw it, I believe I saw this in theaters, and I remember vividly it just went straight into credits after Kyle and Andy leave the factory. But I definitely saw that afterwards, and it's like, oh, but it's to those who haven't seen it, it's essentially the same thing as the opening of Child's Play 3 minus the cobwebs, because it happens right after Chucky's defeated.
Okay. I mean, it makes sense. You know, I was quite surprised because it's just something that I didn't know, you know. Every day is a school day for me. I was just very interested to hear about that. So, that's cool. One thing I wanted to ask you as well, and I know I said I was almost done, but I keep thinking of other things to talk about. Obviously, in this movie, Chucky looks slightly different. You know, it's not identical to his look in the first movie. Did you prefer that? Did you prefer his look in the first one, the second one? Did it not really make too big a difference to me? I didn't really care.
I know that the reason why is that the original idea was, in the first one, like, you know, his voodoo master tells him the more time you spend in that body, the more human you become. And that would affect his look.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, he would start growing stubble. His hairline would start receding a bit. He would start basically becoming more human in his plastic body. And that's a good idea. I actually like that idea. I do think, though, I like the fact that he stays looking more like, they just, I guess they do away with that, and he just remains doll form considerably throughout the entire piece, you know, because it lends itself more to the fact that, you know, he's able to, like, be more stealthy a bit, if you will. You know, he'd get in places, because it becomes more obvious in the first one, like when he's in the elevator, and the old couple notices him and, like, ugly doll, like, fuck you. But that's because he's becoming more human, and his lifelike features are starting to come more into, like, his doll features.
Yes.
So it becomes more obvious that, you know. But yeah, I think I don't know. That's just, maybe it's just me, but I think they were probably more wise to just do with the fact that he's a doll and just leave it at that.
Yeah.
You know, he looks like a doll and just leave it at that, because it lends itself more to the playful aspect. And yeah, more like,
I think as well, they've probably saved themselves quite a lot of grief down the line, you know, for continuity purposes and, you know, those sorts of things. So
yeah,
probably that aspect of it as well.
That probably played more of an aspect into it, because continuity must have been a bitch on that one.
Yeah.
You know, like how much do we add, the stubble do we add to him now? How you know, do we go back a little farther with his hairline? Just let him look like the fucking doll throughout the whole thing.
Exactly. Okay, so you've already talked about it, and this is sort of the last thing that I really have on my list, and is this sort of big final set piece we have in the good guys dolls, you know, factory. You know, they have this big, first of all, you know, you've got like the maze of the dolls, and you have obviously Chucky trying to perform the voodoo ceremony to get into Andy's body and having that fail because he's now spent too long in the doll's body. Right. And then there's the sort of big finale fight scenes where Chucky gets melted, you know, he has molten plastic thrown over him. He rips off his hand and replaces it with a spike and all sorts of things. And, you know, you've already said how much you enjoy this sort of set play. Where does this sort of rank in terms of, like, just set plays in a horror movie? You know, because this is the big final piece. And for me, this could be one of my favorites.
Oh, mine too. Mine too, definitely. Definitely, John Lafia, the director, did an extraordinary job, you know, just putting it together, you know, because it is a maze. Like, it definitely gives me memories of the Hedge Maze and The Shining.
Yes.
You know, just that the complete turning around at this point, like, you know, with Jack chasing Danny. And but a bit more hyper-paced and more tension-filled, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
If you could really say that, I really just compared the climate to The Shining. but if you're familiar with House That Screams, you know The Shining is a very divisive point amongst us. So I know Candy would agree with me.
I purposefully avoided coming back for that episode.
yeah. We recently did Dr. Sleep, and I was mentioning The Shining, and you could see Candy's frustrations. Like, just shut up.
Can I just say that Dr. Sleep has completely divided this podcast right down in the middle, from some of us despise it and some of us love it. There's no middle ground.
Yeah, we mostly all around loved it. I particularly love it. So does Candy. so does Candy, but the fact that I was mentioning The Shining, you can see it on her face. Just shut the fuck up.
I actually can see the look in her face in my head.
That famous look of disgust on Candy's face. Shut up, Rob. But yeah, to go back to the climax, it's really I remember reading a review of it from Leonard Maltin, and Leonard Maltin is famously against these type of movies. And I remember I remember this one specifically. He said that the majority of the film was worthless until the last 15 minutes. and that's high praise for him. You know, if he says that a film is worthless until the last 15 minutes, and that he actually kind of liked the last 15 minutes of the movie, which is the climax of this one, that's high praise, you know? So, but yeah, like, you know, that whole, just, like I said, it's fully on, like, just quick pace, you know, the whole movie, you know, to be exact, but that whole feverish pace, you know what I'm saying, as they're rounding the corners trying to find an exit through this maze of good guy dolls, and then, you know, you have Chucky, I'm gonna get you, in the background, because he's just absolutely, like, that scene where after he tries to transfer his soul, that's one of my issues with this film, though. I just wanted to say, is that we never really get a timeline, like, you know, of when he's supposed to. It's that, like, John tells him in the beginning, the more time you spend in that body, the more human he becomes. But then it's like, so I guess there's a timeline, because now he spent too long in the body. Now he can't transfer his soul. And it's like, when did that come into play?
So I read in the trivia that this movie takes place over 4 days. But we're never, ever explicitly, or even, I don't think it's even suggested that the sort of passage of time in the actual movie. So I'm assuming that that's either taken from the novelization or the screenplay or whatever, that that's the passage of time.
Right. Like you would think that, I mean, I guess that's due to the pacing. Like I said, this film is quickly paced. Mm. Like the whole thing seems like a fucking weekend, like, you know, Saturday and Sunday thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe a Friday, Saturday thing, because Andy does go to school for one day.
And but, what a day at school it was.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're like, he immediately runs into a bully. He calls him a microchip. Like, what kind of an insult is that? What's your problem, microchip? I'm like, that was the best you had, Andy?
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, yeah, you really got him there, buddy. You really got him with that one.
Can I just say as well, during that school scene, I know we talked about Phil being a complete dick, but the death of the school teacher has got to be the most satisfying death in this entire movie.
Oh, yeah, because she's really, oh, her name escapes me. She's a fantastic.
Miss Kettlewell, her real name. No. I've got her real name written down.
Yeah, that's what's bothering me. Because
Beth Grant.
Yes, thank you. She's I always know her as Helen from Speed. She's the one.
Yes,
that gets,
that's how I knew her. That's how I knew.
Yeah,
her.
Yeah, she's the one that gets blown up on the steps.
Yes.
When she gets killed, it's just like, you know, you try not to celebrate these things. You know? Masochistic, but you love it when she fucking bites it, man. Like,
oh, absolutely.
You really do.
Absolutely.
It's beautiful when she bites it. But so that was my problem with it. Like, you know, he's like, I spent too long in this body, you know. And then I love when Kyle knocks over the thing of Dawson. He's like, what the hell? And then, but like that shot of him just bursting out of the boxes and just completely enraged, that shot of Chucky just because he's furious now, like, you know, now he's stuck as a doll forever, and he's like, fuck, you know. So you got this pissed off Chucky, you know, like them trying to get out of there. I also love that shot when they're trying to climb up the factory thing where, like, they send the dolls down.
The conveyor belt, sort of.
Yeah. And Andy slips and falls, and then, like, Chucky's at the bottom, and he's doing that, like, chasing the thing. And it's like, that's probably my favorite, like, suspenseful moment in the movie, as, like, you know, Andy's trying to. And it's also funny, though, because Andy is bigger than Chucky, so Andy could take bigger grabs, and poor Chucky, like, he's got these short arms, so he always has to go one at a. He's going so fast, but he can only go one at a time.
Don't love the cardio on that doll.
Yeah, totally.
But no, you're absolutely right. Like the whole pacing of this sort of final set, and like you said, the whole movie as well. And this is a short movie too. It's what, 82 minutes or something, I think, it clocks in.
Yeah.
So, you know, this really flies by as a movie, you know, which I think is to its credit. And this whole sort of final scene, like you say, whether you're comparing it to The Shining or whether, you know, you're talking about, you know, taking one rung up on the conveyor belts or whatever. But, you know, this is, I think, just the overall of the set piece. And there's, you know, there's a couple of false finishes in there as well, where you think things are fine, you know, he gets melted, and then, you know, he's pulling just the upper part of his body on like a little trolley, you know, to get around, ripping his hand off, you know, there's a whole
that's the series of unfortunate events that poor Chucky,
exactly, like,
he's literally just, you know, just wheeling himself on one hand, you know, with no legs, just like, I'm gonna get you, like, he's just, poor Chucky just can't catch a break.
Yeah, and I think this final scene just, for me, encapsulates my enjoyment so much of the movie. So many times when I'm, you know, when I'm sort of trying to analyze movies for the show, you know, even movies that I like and I love, because I'm sitting there analyzing them, you know, I kind of end up clock watching a little bit. And, you know, I sit there and I think, okay, right, I've still got 30 minutes to go. I didn't look at the clock once in this movie. I watched it all the way through, took my notes. I was just having an absolute blast of a time. And, you know, we'll get into the ratings and that in a little bit. But, you know, is this, like you were saying, this isn't high art. This isn't, you know, but this movie knows what it is and it plays to its strengths. Is it the greatest movie of all time? No, of course not. But would I watch this over 95% of other horror movies? Yeah, probably.
Oh yeah, most definitely. I also like to go back to the climax a bit. It's, you know, I love slasher movies. They're probably my. I remember the first conversation I had with Candy when we were talking about the podcast, and I was like, if you ever need somebody to, you know, have someone who has almost encyclopedic knowledge of slasher movies, I'm your guy, because I've seen many of them and I know them well. But in comparison to other slasher movies, like slasher movies, like, usually have like fine climaxes, but they rarely have climaxes this good. Like, you see most of them, like Friday 13th, like it's just the same old, Jason's chasing them around the campgrounds and they're running and he's catching up, you know, eventually. And it's just the same old, you know, same old thing. There's nothing visually striking about it. This one is really just, like we said, quickly paced and it's tense, but it's also visually striking, you know, because you got this maze of just dolls in this factory. And we've seen climaxes in factories, of course. The Terminator franchise is known for ending their films in factories. Like the first one, but like just one that, like, but they usually decrepit or like, you know, foundries, you know, with the steel work and stuff. This one is a factory of toys. So you have that maze of these dolls and it's just like, just very striking on a visual standpoint. And it really just like from as a kid to now, that's, I think this is the one climax that stuck with me the most. Mm-hmm. You know, as they're trying to find their exit through this maze of dolls, you know, and you have the music blaring, you know, it's a great score, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and they're just trying to find a way out, and it's just so tense, and you got Chucky looming in the background. This is, I think I could easily say this is one of, if not my favorite climax to a slasher movie ever.
Yeah, I think so, because as well, you're talking about it being visually striking. Like you say, you're ending up in a factory, but, you know, because it's a kid's toy factory, you know, you've got these bright colours, and mm-hmm. you know, the colour palette just hits so much differently to what you would normally expect as well. And I think that goes a long way to the sort of overall sort of visual aspect of this, because you're right, it is very visually striking, and, you know, all these shots of these sort of looming wall, this looming wall of dolls and his mazes, and it's, you know, bright yellow and it's just, you know, glaring at you in the face. So you're absolutely right in terms of how visually striking this sort of finale is.
Yeah, it's almost like a fun House of Horror ride.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Okay, so we've covered everything on my list. Is there anything else about Child's Play 2 that you would like to talk about or bring up at all about this movie?
I think we covered just about everything. I think I got all my points out that I really wanted to say. So, I'm good.
Okay. Just before we move on, I would just like to highlight that point you made at the end. This movie does also have a really great score, you know, that really helps the pace of the movie as well. So I just, like, wanted to echo that as well before we move on. But with that being said, let's get into our next segment. We're going to talk about some trivia. As always, we will start off with the finances of this movie. This movie had a budget of $13 million, grossed worldwide at the box office $35.7 million, so pretty much almost tripled its money. So I would say that's a pretty good return, return on interest there. So obviously, you know, a big hit with the fans. We've talked about, you know, how that these movies actually were really well received by the fans, and, you know, I'll get into when we get into the ratings how it might not have been so well received by the critics, but we'll try and offset the critic scores a little bit, possibly. We've talked a little bit about Beth Grant, who plays Miss Kettlewell in this movie, who, you know, like you say, we know as Helen from Speed and a few other things as well. She was actually apparently really unsure about just accepting a role in a horror movie. You know, she was really apprehensive about it. She called her friend Dina Manoff for advice. And for those who don't know, Dina Manoff actually played Maggie in the original Child's Play movie, but Beth Grant didn't know that she played Maggie in the original Child's Play movie. So she phoned her up for legitimate advice, and Dina Manoff was like, I think you should go for it.
That was a good point. Dina Manoff, Aunt Maggie was a real bitch and got what she deserved.
Oh dear. So we've talked kind of in depth about the showdown at the factory. We briefly mentioned the death of Miss Kettlewell as well. These are both elements that were in the original script for the first movie that got cut from Mancini's script and then obviously got carried over from the first movie. So, you know, it kind of goes with, you were talking about the third movie as well, being that, you know, maybe at that point, and like you say, Mancini had said it as well, like he was maybe just starting to run out of ideas. You know, even in this movie, some of these ideas were ideas for the first one anyway. And finally, because I actually couldn't find a huge amount about this movie. So we also talked about Catherine Hicks, who of course played Karen in the first movie, Andy's mum. I talked about how, you know, there was a couple of scenes that were filmed and eventually cut. I think there was the same with the detective from the first movie, but she was actually on set during the entirety of the filming of this movie, because her husband is the guy who operated the animatronic Chucky doll. So she was there the entire time.
Yeah, Kevin Yeager. Mm-hmm. They met on the set of the first one, and they've been together ever since. They're still together. Which is great. I love stories like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I remember watching, I think it was on the supplementary material for the first one's special edition Blu-ray, perhaps, and they talked about that. When they first met, he said, "Here's the doll, Mrs. Hicks, that, you know, you have to hold it." She was like, "Who's this cute guy? You know, he's really cute." And and you know, they say the rest was history, you know. So yeah, she was definitely on set the whole time, which is funny to me, is that she's there because she's with the guy who created Chucky, but she doesn't have a scene in the movie. So I can't imagine how awkward that must have been.
A little bit awkward, right?
they won't put me in the movie, but I'm here anyway.
Didn't we fire you last week? You know? Yeah. The last piece of trivia that I have, Brad Dourif, of course, the legendary Brad Dourif, filmed all of the, because obviously he's voiced in this movie, he doesn't actually appear in this movie at any stage like he does in the first one. All of his voice recordings were recorded before the filming of this movie actually began, so it was hardly ever on stage, and they would just play tapes of his line delivery to, you know, the actors, so that they would have to play off a tape.
I know that is like rarity instead of the norm. Like I know a lot of performers usually like having the actor on set. Mm-hmm. You know, so, but I think they did that because it was so they can match up Chucky's lines to the mouth better, you know, by having the audio pre-recorded. So I guess that works out. Also, I think Brad Dourif kind of creeps them out, because I know he gets really into it. If you watch his behind the scenes footage of him getting into character to play Chucky, and they were doing rehearsals and Brad Dourif is playing Chucky on his knees. It's just, it's both hilarious and fucking creepy.
Yeah, I remember reading, when we were covering the first movie, I was reading about how he would scare his daughter by mistake, you know, when he was at home trying to get into the character and things like that. So, yeah, he definitely likes to throw himself into the role. But that's all I have for trivia. I know you are, like you said earlier, you are incredibly knowledgeable about slasher movies. Is there any other tidbits that you can think of, or anything that our listeners would quite like to know?
I think you hit the most most important tidbits on the film. I know that this is actually, we were talking about the length. This is actually the shortest film in the entire franchise.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And I think that probably helps best because it was like, you know, there's no need to, like, I think if it would have went on a little longer, it probably would have, you know, kind of taken the, you know,
look,
fun out of it.
There's no need to have another half hour of this movie, you know, like, it does what it sets out to do. It does it in relatively short time. Look, it's still not the shortest movie we've ever seen. You know, I think, like we said, it's 82 or 86 minutes. I can't remember which one it is, but
I think it's around, like, 82 or 84.
Yeah, so it absolutely sets out what it intends to do. And, you know, it achieves it in that time. So there's absolutely no need to have an extra, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes, however long, you know.
Right. For a perfect example, as much as I love Wes Craven, Shocker is almost, like, which came out the year before this one, is almost 2 hours long. And it's like, but why? Why? Why could this movie not have been 90 minutes? There's no need for this movie to be over almost two hours.
I think that's the most common question a horror fan will ask in their entire life. But why?
Yeah. I remember having that similar complaint about, I recently saw, I think maybe even last year or the year before that, I first saw Happy Birthday to Me. Okay. For the first time, and I had that highly recommended. I used to be in a relationship with a female who was older than me. We're still friends to this day. Mm-hmm. She highly recommended Happy Birthday to Me, and I watched it, and that movie's 111 minutes. And it literally, but why? And it's a hunk of shit, the whole thing. And she was mad because I was talking shit throughout the whole movie because we watched it together, and she was like, you kept talking that the whole movie, and I was like, yeah, because I didn't want to hear it anymore. I hate this.
My fiance does that to me. She'll talk through something so that I don't have to, so she doesn't have to watch it anymore, or she'll just get up and leave. Actually, sometimes she'll just blatantly stop watching it, but yeah.
But yeah, like, I think it works best that this movie is the runtime that it is, you know, no fuss, no muss. It's over and done with in a quickie. But what a glorious 84 minutes it is.
Absolutely, absolutely. Right, with that being said, then, let's get into our final segment and let's talk about the ratings. As always, we will start off with the critics' scores. And these critics' scores, now I've talked about other movies where I feel that the critics are being overly harsh, but these critics' scores, and even one, because we also do an audience score as well, but even that audience score, they actually hurt me a little bit. IMDb rated this movie at 5.9 out of 10, Metacritic giving it 37 out of 100. The Rotten Tomatoes critics have scored it at 48% rotten. And the Rotten Tomatoes audience, this is the one that really hurts me, is at 47%.
Yes, that's the audience score is the one that's the most surprising.
That's the one that surprises me because, you know, every time when we do an episode now on this show, we throw it out. And I know, obviously, we can only capture a small amount of sort of general opinion when we throw things out on our social medias and things like that. But I genuinely have not seen a single person respond to me with a negative opinion of this movie. So that audience score really, really surprised me. But let's see if we can do it a little bit of justice. So, Rob, what will you score Child's Play 2?
Remind me, how high can I go again?
0 to 10.
Oh, definitely a 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10?
I see no problems with it. I mean, I had a minor problem, but that's just a nitpick. It doesn't affect my overall, the way I look at the film. Just a small minor inconsistency, but on the whole, this movie is fantastic. Everything about it is just glorious. It's been one of my all-time favorites since I was a kid. It's still one of my all-time favorites to this day, and I love it so much. So, yep, 10 out of 10.
Nice. I think it's important, like I always say when I'm doing these ratings, I think it's always important as well to rate movies within its sort of subgenre as well. You know, there are probably technically better movies out there, you know, but within this, you have to rate things like Child's Play up against other slasher movies. There's no point in rating a movie like this against something, I don't know, like Midsommar or Hereditary or something like that, because they're just non-comparable. I actually, from memory, like I said, because it had been quite a while since I revisited this movie, and from memory I sat there before I started thinking to myself, I remember liking the first movie more, and as I watched this movie again today, I was like, I must remember wrong, because I love the first Child's Play movie, but I really love this movie. I'm going to score this 9 out of 10 fucking women drivers. Like you say, you mentioned a couple of like little nitpicky things, and you know, I'm not going to score it down massively for that. Is this my favorite slasher movie? No, for me, that's always going to be Halloween. But again, they're very different movies as well, so you've got to take that into consideration too. But this is really, in terms of, like, if someone says to you, like, show me one of the best slasher movies, Child's Play 2 is definitely up there. It's fun, it's fast-paced, it's got some serious horror movie moments. It's got some decent gore in there as well. Like, it's not, it's not to be understated, you know. It's got some really good set pieces, and like we were talking about earlier, possibly one of the best finale scenes, you know, sort of final set plays that there has been in horror history as well. So this movie gets a massive, massive rating from both of us.
Yeah, most definitely.
I
definitely would agree with you. If you ask me, like, give me your 5 or 10 best slasher movies ever, I definitely would be biased, but this is definitely going on the list right up there. But of course, Halloween. My personal favorite is The Burning.
Okay.
I think The Burning is a perfect slasher movie. The Burning does everything correct. But yeah, this one's right up there. This right, maybe even more so than the original Child's Play. And I love that film to death. But this one definitely, when it comes to the slasher genre, this is the one that does it perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And that fact means that what I'm about to say actually does pain me a little bit. So given our scores, and we on this show, we combine them with the critic scores to work out an average score, and it gives Child's Play 2 an average rating of just 5.6 out of 10. So we hold it up a little bit. Unfortunately, because again, I'm a nerd for spreadsheets, I keep track of all the ratings we've ever done on the show. It means that Child's Play 2 is in 65th place of the now 91 movies that we have covered, horror movies that we have covered on the show. It puts it one place below Hellbound, Hellraiser 2, and one place above Terrifier.
Oh, I started Terrifier, but I haven't finished it. Maybe I will eventually one day.
I personally
think it's better than Hellbound, Hellraiser 2. I mean, I'm not that fond of Hellbound, Hellraiser 2. I used to be as a kid, but I remember I revisited not too long ago, and I was like, oh my god, this is dreary. It's fuck.
I mean, I'll always love the first Hellraiser more than Hellraiser 2 anyway.
Oh, yeah. The first Hellraiser is always going to be fucking tops for me. It's going to be one of my favorite horror movies ever.
Absolutely. And I'm actually a massive fan of Terrifier. I'm really looking forward to Terrifier 2, which hopefully will come out later this year. But, you know, I think Child's Play 2 definitely deserves. And just to put that into comparison, Child's Play, the original. So this one went into 64th or 65th place. Child's Play 2 comes in at 52nd place. So it's about 10 or 11 spots higher than Child's Play 2. It got a higher score from all of the critics that we've mentioned. IMDb, Rotten Tomatoes, Metacritic. They all scored Child's Play higher than Child's Play 2.
Well, I think that goes into what we were saying earlier about, you know, critics just not being very fond of it. Like I said, like Child's Play goes for more classical suspense compared to this one. It's a straight slasher. So it's obvious that's why they favor it higher and much more, because it's more like, you know, almost Hitchcockian compared to this one being more Halloweenist, or, you know, the more definitely owes more to the slasher than just being, you know, about tension and suspense, even though this one does have tension and suspense, as we just went over.
Yeah, absolutely. And just for the listeners at home as well, just in case you were wondering why, because we don't normally do it on the show, on the House That Screams podcast, all of their ratings is out of something from the movie.
Because
we don't normally do it on this show. So just in case people are wondering, like, why has he fucking brought that up?
Yeah, I missed a cue on that. I thought we were just going to be regular, but then he did the fucking Women Drivers, and I was like, oh, fuck, I missed it.
You missed it, but it's fine. You couldn't have done any better anyway.
All right. Hold on. I'll give it 10 out of 10 air pumps.
There we go. Hey.
10 out of 10 air pumps for me.
Awesome. Just before we get out of here, we'll do a few of the listener opinions. As I said earlier, we always throw out to our listeners for some of their opinions on this movie. We'll read a few of them out on the show. So Real Dude on Instagram says, I love it. I like Jenny Agutter and Greg German's characters. Of course, loved Brad Dourif. Long Live Horror, also on Instagram, simply says, love. One of my favourite Chucky movies. And J. Michael Wright on Twitter says, OMFG. This movie cemented the terror that is Chucky in my mind as a child. The scene where Chucky walks out of the school closet with a ruler, smacking it in his hands as he slowly approaches the teacher, left me with nightmares. So I'm glad that all of them loved the movies almost as much as me and Rob did as well. So
that's probably the most iconic shot of the movie too.
Absolutely, like that gif is everywhere on social media, right?
Yeah, most definitely.
Absolutely, but that's it. That's going to do it for this week's show. Rob, thank you so much for agreeing to come back on the show. It's a real pleasure having you back on.
Oh no, most thank you for having me. This is always a blast talking to you, Ian. You are the best. We definitely love and appreciate you over at the House of Screams, and we love having you, and we greatly appreciate you, because, you know, we start over a little later. We do video on there, so I always look at Ian, and Ian always just looks like, oh god, he's having a good time, but like you could just see this man just wants to sleep, and I always feel so bad. So we greatly appreciate you always, you know, just taking one for the team, you know, and just being up until like God knows how long, because I know it's like, oh my god, it must be like 4 o'clock over there.
I think the latest was a 4 a.m. finish for me. I absolutely love coming on. Look, I've been on your show 4 times now, so I wouldn't have done that 4 times unless I absolutely love coming on. You have got a really great family over there. Like you say, from Candy and Sean to yourself, to David, to Nico, to Erica, and everyone else that is involved with that show. You know, you've got a really cool little family over there. So I absolutely love being able to come across, be a part of that every once in a while. And of course, one of our regular co-hosts, Lindsay, has also been across to, she talked to you guys about The Gate. And Lucy is also coming on your show shortly as well, I believe. So I absolutely appreciate the fact that you've had me on the show so many times, and that you've got, you know, our co-hosts on. But no, absolutely adore having you on the show. Same goes for, you know, Candy and Sean. Obviously, we've got David coming on the show very, very soon as well. So no, the pleasure is all mine. But before we finish up, do you want to remind our listeners where they can find you on social media, where they can find the shows that you are on?
Oh, of course. You can find the House of Screams on Twitter at @House_Screams. You can also find Candy. Candy doesn't have a personal Instagram for the show. She has her own personal Instagram, and that's Candy the Final Girl, where she posts, you know, all her stuff, as well as information regarding the show, House of Screams. You can find my show, The Action Drunkies, where we talk all things action, at on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. On Twitter, we're at Action Drunkies. Instagram, we're The Action Drunkies, as well as on Instagram, as well as YouTube and Facebook. You can find me at The Cine Drunkie on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Of course, we also want to let you know we added my co-host to the House of Screams family. Now he's also another permanent panel member, my boy Mac the All-Star, who's my co-host on The Action Drunkie. You can find him at Mac the All-Star on Twitter and Instagram. And yeah, also just a quick shout out to my boy Mike Scott over at Atkins Undisputed, which you can find him on Twitter at Atkins Podcast. As well as Instagram at Atkins Undisputed, where he talks about the films of one of the greatest action stars of all time, Scott Atkins. And yeah, that's it.
Don't forget all the links to the House of Screams, to the Action Drunkies, and to, of course, Rob's personal social media accounts. They'll all be in the description for the episode. So please do go check out those two shows. Go and support them across their social medias as well. You will not regret it. It's a really, really great, great show. And The Action Drunkies, like you say as well, another really, really top-notch show. So please
do
go and check that out. You can find us on Twitter at Screams Behind, Facebook and Instagram is at Behind the Screams Podcast. Also Behind the Screams Podcast on YouTube, where we now release video recordings of our main Wednesday episodes every Friday. The main show, obviously, you can find every Wednesday, and then of course we also release extra episodes on Sundays too. We are also on Twitch, twitch.tv/behindthescreamspodcast. We stream a variety of horror video games there 4 nights a week, Wednesdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. We're also on TikTok, Behind the Screams Podcast, and you can also support us on Patreon, patreon.com/behindthescreamspodcast. Our last couple of episodes. Last week on the Sunday show, I was really, really delighted to welcome one of the co-writers of Host, Gemma Hurley, to the podcast to talk about women in horror and female representation in horror, and that was an awesome, awesome interview. And on the main show last week, we talked about Teeth, which was interesting, shall we say the least. But up next on the show, we are going to be discussing Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, which I am so excited to get my teeth into. So please do come and check that out.
That was one of my all-time favorites as a kid. Me and my sister loved that one.
It's actually Lindsay's choice. We take it in turns to choose a movie, so it's Lindsay's choice this week. And when we started up our Horror Hall of Fame at New Year, as part of our awards show that we did, and Elvira was Lindsay's first choice to go into to the Horror Hall of Fame. I chose John Carpenter, obviously. Who else went in there? We had Sam Raimi went in there, Stephen King, and another couple of names that are escaping me right now, including Elvira definitely really excited to talk about that. But until that time, thank you once again to Rob for joining me on this week's show. Thank you to you guys at home for downloading and listening to this episode, and we hope you will join us next time on Behind the Screams.